KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
From KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com, it's The Treatment. Welcome to The Treatment. I'm Elvis Mitchell. You know, since 1999, I've been talking to my guest today. When her first feature film had its debut at the Sundance Film Festival, that film was The Virgin Suicide. Sophia, you can keep on smiling. It's okay. You just made me scared all of a sudden. She's been here for Marie Antoinette, of course, Lost in Translation, and last was here for The Bling Ring. Her new film is writer-director is The Beguile, of course, I'm talking to Sophia Coppola. So thrilling to have you. It's always so great to talk to you.
Oh, thank you, Elvis. I'm happy to be on your show.
It's funny because, you know, I saw the movie at the New Beverly last night, and I was thinking something that the trailer for The Virgin Suicide sort of basically made concrete for me. There are titles that run between some of the shots: mystery, love, death, sex.
Yeah.
That's The Beguile too, isn't it?
Yeah, it's funny. When I first saw The Beguile, it reminded me, something about it reminded me of Virgin Suicides. And so when I started thinking about how I would approach it, the look of it reminded me of similar references and the girls like in the Virgin Suicides in their little floral prom dresses and secluded in a house and encountering boys is so mysterious. So there was definitely something that reminded me of it. But then it didn't feel like I was retreading familiar territory because it pushed into other areas that I haven't really looked at, I think.
Well, but the thing I was thinking about, and also I should say that something of yours I'd never seen projected before, but I saw it on TV, Lick the Star, was also shown. And I also thought about that too, because there is in your movies a kind of a tribal aspect, people who band together and who sort of live sort of on the margins of whatever worlds they're in. And there's one person who is trying to get in or out of that world. And that Lick the Star does at the very beginning. And your movies have ever since all done that.
Yeah, it's funny. I hadn't watched my first short in so long. And it was funny to see how connected they were. And yeah, it was always, I mean, that came from a story in junior high. But the idea of these, a pack or a tribe of girls and the hierarchy within that and someone coming into that. And I don't know why that's always been interesting to me. Maybe because we moved around a lot. We would always go on location with my dad when he was doing a film. So I always had to come into a world that I wasn't a part of. I would just go to the local school, and whether it was the Philippines or Tulsa, Oklahoma. And then I had to kind of read the situation and how I would fit in. So I never thought about that. But that probably has something to do with how I see, you know, going into a group as an outsider and being able to read, you know, who's in charge and the roles in that.
But also, too, that outsider figure, be it Bill's character in Lost in Translation or Colin in Beguile or even your protagonist in Lick the Star, we can see that person deciding whether they want to be part of that in-group or not. And that idea of having somebody who has an outsider's perspective but also can chart all of this is really interesting to me.
Oh, yeah. I never thought about it, but I think it must come from moving around all the time and always having to pay attention to group dynamics and how to fit in.
But how often do you decide if you want to be part of that group or not? Because we can, in each of these situations, we can see your protagonist making the decision to join the group.
Yeah, I guess as a kid, I you know, it's just easier to try to fit in with the group that you thought, just it's a survival, you know, like the group that's not going to get picked on. So I think I was, I had a good sense of how to just kind of a chameleon thing of how to just fit in these different types of groups and read them. But then I guess then when I was older, I didn't want to be part of a group. I guess in my 20s, you know, there was still that kind of clique mentality. And then I made a, you know, I think maybe when I moved to New York, I kind of left the idea of having that kind of group, and it was more exciting to be an individual in the world.
But also, too, in these things, and it's interesting to see, like, the Star and the Beguile together. Both protagonists are basically figure out how to work the group to their own advantage.
Oh, yeah. I know it's weird to see them all, see all those together, and I never really paid attention to the through line the similarities. And it's a lot about power and hierarchy and with Lick the Star, it's all about a queen bee who gets dethroned, which was a real a real story that happened in my middle school.
Oh, did it?
Yeah, there was a girl who was like the mean queen bee, and then she had this whole plan to poison the boys, and I kept how similar it is to Beguiled. And then everyone turned on her, and then she never got over it, which I thought was, that's what made me think about how it was so devastating to her that she kind of never got over her fall from grace as the queen bee in seventh grade, and also how vicious middle school girls can be. But yeah, so no, it was funny to revisit that and see the similarities with Beguiled. But there is something definitely about, yeah, a group dynamic and when women are together, that I always love how women communicate in that group, that it's very nonverbal, or it's like with tone or glance. And so I guess I must be attuned to that from always being the new kid and having to suss it out quickly.
It's funny too, because so often the guys in these movies are people don't quite know how to talk to women. I mean, they think they understand them, and it turns out that they don't.
I feel like there's always a mystery between men and women, and that kind of all literature is based on that. I mean, there's so many, it's all love stories, but there's so much, I think there's always confusion between men and women.
It's a treatment. We're talking about the entire career of Sofia Coppola, but her new film as writer director is an adaptation of The Beguiled. And I think this is the point I should say. I mentioned this to you last night. It didn't feel to me like a remake, because for one thing, the Don Siegel Clint Eastwood version is profoundly creepy, and from the outset, because as much as it's a costume drama, it's also a B picture, and Don Siegel can't help but using B picture tensions in it.
Yeah, definitely. It has a more horror element.
And yours is, while it's more like Southern Gothic, I find myself thinking of Flannery O'Connor.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I was wanting it to have a Southern Gothic feeling and kind of just embrace the whole atmosphere of the Spanish moss and the spikes on the gate and women with candelabras and just to feel like the heat of the South and that kind of claustrophobia. We really wanted you to feel like you're there and they're buttoned up in this sweltering heat.
It's also kind of about shifting power, too, and the way the Siegel thing isn't. It's about him having power taken away from him, because he's this idealized object. You would almost weirdly think that the movie's made by a woman, because Clint Eastwood is so fetishized.
Yeah, it's so funny. And it's so clear, you know, that he's a bad guy. And I think what is enjoyable about that movie, it's like a man's fantasy turned into a nightmare, where ours, they're trying to figure him out. And I'm hoping that the audience, I wanted them to be in the woman's point of view. And there's a scene where he's kind of romancing Kirsten's character. And I was showing
Kirsten Dunst.
Yeah, Kirsten Dunst's character. And I was showing a friend and they said, like, oh, I've dated that guy. Like that. But I wanted you to feel like you probably shouldn't believe him, but you want to go away with the fantasy of running off with him. And he was, you know, appealing to all of their hidden desires that they're so cut off from.
But you talked about the chameleon aspect of your own life, and he's a chameleon that in each setting, he's a different person.
Yeah, that's what I love, is he's trying to survive, so he has to find a way to appeal to each one of them, from the 12-year-old girl to Nicole Kidman as the headmistress, and he's figuring them all out. And it's fun to see him, you know, how he changes for each one.
In a weird way, it made me think of Alien, that sort of shapeshifter aspect where at every point in the movie, the alien has a different form.
Oh, wow.
You think about the alien from beginning to end, the alien, the creature takes on a different
visage. Oh, that's
funny.
I never thought of that. I have to rewatch that.
but that's, again, there's a real physical beauty in this movie that sort of distracts from the fact that it's a genre piece. And I just wonder if that scared you, the idea of doing a genre piece, because you haven't really done anything like this before.
No, it excited me, but it was a challenge of, like, how do I do this? And I really made it my assignment. And when I was writing the script, it was the first time I wrote a script that was so, you know, plot-driven and trying to think about suspense and tension. And I probably think about other films more than I have in the past, about, you know, looking at, like, how Hitchcock would do suspense with when they're passing the bowl of mushrooms, or, you know, there was a little bit more like of film history in the back of my mind. And because you're doing, and also for the genre of just, you know, the girls in nightgowns with candelabras, that, you know, from a, you know, 60s Italian horror movie or something, you know, it was fun to play with all of those pieces.
It's interesting to me too, I guess, because what you've done in this is sort of taken a really narrative heavy story and made it your own, which each scene feels like it's anecdotal, but each scene actually advances the plot.
Oh, great. I was really, yeah, I had to be more conscious of the plot moving forward and then it turning on that, but then to still have, you know, an atmosphere that I that I like and get into. But I think I was really thinking about the power shifts back and forth that you think, oh, is he, you know, who's in charge here? Which I think is something, you know, in a relationship you can relate to. There's power shifts, and, you know, first he's kind of in control, and then are they? And how I thought it was fun to look at how it kind of goes back and forth, and is he a prisoner or a guest?
It's because it's so many things. I mean, I think about the innocence of Henry James, but also...
Oh, I watched the Deborah Kerr movie.
Yeah, I thought you might have, because It feels a little bit like that to me, too.
Yeah, definitely. I love the kind of that atmosphere, so I looked at that. And Tess for the beautiful Dewey photography.
But also there's that kind of sense of rot that you see in those Italian giallo movies.
Yes.
That there's almost like this primal sense of rot in the movie. He's kind of on the side of the road rotting away. He's basically a piece of garbage.
Yeah.
At the very beginning of the movie that is picked up off the side of the road.
I didn't think of that. And I love when she's in her – when Nicole Kidman's in her white nightgown with the blood on the front. I don't want to give away too much. But that has the kind of – the imagery of those kind of giallos or that era of movies.
I thought so, too. And, you know, Colin was here about a year ago, and he was telling me he was really excited about going to do this.
Oh, cool.
And I was excited that you have him speak in his accent.
Yeah, I wasn't really planning on it. Actually, in the book, the character's an Irish immigrant. And then when I met with Colin about this part, he's so charming in his natural accent. And so we thought, I thought to keep it. And I'm so glad, because I thought it added an element of him being even more exotic to these women as a foreigner. And it was true to that time. And his personality is so charming with his real native tongue.
But he's also one of these guys who is much smarter than you think he is just from looking at him, which is...
Yeah, he's really quick. And he has a dark side, which I thought was important. We needed someone that you would believe had a dark side, or else it wouldn't be believable. And I never wanted it to be campy. Like, I wanted to hope the audience to really be along for the whole ride.
Because even in Lick the Star, your protagonist is hobbling on one leg, and I don't want to give too much away.
Yeah, and there's a picture of Clint Eastwood in her locker, which is, I was like, what?
Were you a Clint Eastwood fan growing up?
Not in an extraordinary way, but I always thought he was a badass and cool. And... so handsome.
when did you first see the original Beguiled? Do you remember?
I didn't see it until maybe like 5 years ago. I didn't know about the Beguiled.
Oh,
I'd never heard of it. And but I know friends that are cinephiles, like Quentin. Of course, it's a classic in that genre. But I never knew about it. It's not the kind of movies my dad watched or we had in our house, you know. But yeah, I never had seen it. And then Anne Ross, my friend who's the production designer on this, told me about it. And she said, I think you need to see this movie, The Beguiled. I think you need to do a new version of it. And yeah, and I would have never thought of that. And I sort of don't believe in remakes. I know that they have been done successfully, but I just think if it's, why would you remake someone else's work? But then when I saw it, I knew what she was talking about. And it reminded me of Virgin Suicides, that there are elements of it. And I don't know, it just stayed in my mind. I couldn't get it out of my mind. It was so weird. And I never saw the turn of events that happened in the story. I never saw them coming. I think it's fun to see the movie if you have no idea, because you just, I don't know, you just don't see it. And so I wanted to really play that up and to make the world that you come into so feminine and not threatening that, you know, you don't see where it's going.
Well, I think that the thing that's interesting about that movie and what actually connects you to it a bit is that at a certain point, it's a suspense movie. You have to get lost in the moment. You can't allow yourself to think ahead. And in the Siegel version, the original is directed by Don Siegel, it's all about sort of creating this tension, about having this movie star walk in, this guy who's bigger than life, walk into this room. He's literally, he dwarfs everybody. They're all like Lilliputians around him.
Yeah, it's true. He's very Clint Eastwood.
And for Colin, it's really almost like, again, you bring a, that's just like bringing a pet into the house who basically takes over the house and bringing a stray in.
Yeah, we thought about him being like a wounded puppy. Like, oh, can we keep that puppy? We when I was a kid, when we were in Tulsa, Oklahoma, during Outsiders, we found our dog at the Dairy Queen, and we're like, Dad, can we keep him? And yeah, so I think of it as like bringing in a puppy, and he's so lovable, and also also for them that he's not threatening. So they don't see it coming, and no one sees the other kind of brutal side that they both have.
We'll take a break and come back and try not to give too much of the movie away in the second half of the show. It's The Treatment. My guest is Sophia Koppler. Her new film as director is The Beguiled. More to come. Stay with us. Welcome back. It's The Treatment. We're talking about The Beguile with its writer-director, Sofia Coppola. And I guess this idea of people living outside of where they're from, which you talked about, it makes all of your movies seem to me in some way autobiographical.
Yeah, I always feel like I put myself into the movies and I have to, you know, connect to the characters and imagine their experience. So, yeah, I guess my dad always said to make personal films, and that's what he loved. And so I kind of grew up with this idea that and it's such a, you know, so gratifying to be able to express yourself in that way.
But I just find myself thinking, and I was watching all this stuff to get ready for this anyway, but then seeing the trailers back to back, that there is so often in your movies one person who has this steel will, you know? And I think what's interesting about The Beguile is there are two people between, finally, the soldier and the headmistress. They both have these kind of these two things going against each other. And that's obviously comes out of this being a suspense plot. But where do you find that character? Where does that character appear in your life? Because it's so often in the work that you do.
Oh, I never noticed that or thought about that. I don't know. I think I have a strong will, and I learned that from my dad, you know, because to make films, you have to have a lot of people, a lot of opposition, a lot of people say no, and you just have to be determined and driven to figure out how to make it no matter what. When you have, you know, an idea in your mind that you're excited about, probably all creative people have that.
I think so, but again, just watching the way John, played by Colin, sort of plays these women, it's almost like he's directing them when he's having that first dinner scene.
Oh, that's funny. Well, he's definitely taking them all in and enjoying his effect, I think.
But also the way I've seen directors on sets, you have to know how to talk to each department, and each actor has a different need, and that right. He speaks to each of these women in
and
a way.
Their needs,
yes.
Yeah, no, I think that was part of the character, that he has to read them all and be able to, yeah, read what each one wants. And he's a big brother to the 12-year-old, and he's a, you know, kind of playmate to Elle Fanning's character. And so that was sort of the fun of watching him, I guess, like any good playboy.
Or director, though.
I mean, oh, yeah, I never thought about that.
There's something about
that. So I'm McBee, perhaps.
Well, you said
I did. I was led there.
Thank you. Sure, yes, it's my fault. After all, I made the movie. Oh, wait, no, you made the movie, didn't you?
Yeah, but it's funny because I would never think that that's the character I relate to, because I relate more to the, obviously, the women characters. And I think also because it was interesting to me to have Elle Fanning, Kirsten Dunst, and Nicole Kidman, and I've been like the age or that stage of each of them, so I can really put myself into what it's like to be that age, even though I'm not, you know, like those characters, and Elle's character's, you know, more extreme and trying to be attractive to men, which I'm not. But there's, you know, I've seen that, and then Kirsten's character is very repressed. But I can imagine, you know, each stage and how they would, you know, what they'd be looking for in this man.
I think something I should say here, too, because I think sometimes people need permission, is that it's also, I brought up Henry James, because it's kind of a comedy of manners.
Yeah, I think it's really funny. So I'm always happy when people start to laugh in it, because I think there's a moment where they're not sure if it's okay to laugh. And yet I was trying to make sure that we don't go into full camp, but then to really embrace the humor, but then still keep it connected emotionally as a drama. So I think it was something we definitely were aware of, the tightrope of tone when we were editing the film.
But even, and again, I hate to keep doing this, keep looking at all of your work here, but that's what we do here. That idea of people trying to figure out the sort of the etiquette of their situation, which is so different from where they're from, it happens a lot in your movies too, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, I guess that kind of fish out of water thing, and definitely in Marie Antoinette, there's the court and she's trying to figure it out. But I think in any culture, society, there's always the codes and you have to find, you know, how to interpret those to fit in, which I guess must come from my army brat childhood of going on location with my family. That I never realized that until we're talking about it this morning, that I always had to kind of figure out these very different cultures.
But I guess it's just so interesting to me, just to kind of, because I've known you for so long, to see all these changes in you and to see how much, I don't know, I don't want to say you're a much more confident filmmaker, because the films always seem confident. I was shocked at seeing how confident like the star felt on a big screen, because I'd never seen it projected before. But part of that is, from an early age, you've always found a way to make sure we know who everybody is in the scene. There may be a lot of people, but we know we can differentiate all the characters.
Oh, good.
And that's an early talent that you honed into a skill pretty quickly, isn't it?
Yeah, I never thought about that. I just, you know, you have an idea of something you want to make and then you try to convey it. So I'm glad if that comes across. And I do always like groups and how they communicate and who stands out and who's in charge and all of that. So I guess looking at that. And I think it always helped me to personalize them to when I'm writing this, I think of certain people so that they become, you know, human and not cliches. And even with the younger girls in The Beguiled, there's a group of them, but I hope they each have their own personality and not, you know, they don't just all get turned into a mush.
No, but you've always, I think, been drawn to that, but you can do that because I think there are people who try to write large groups and it ends up being like one side versus the other side. But it's really territorial in your movies. Everybody has this...
Their role.
Yeah. And you were talking about the younger girls. And there's one scene that at the final dinner scene is really violent. That has to do with like an... I don't want to give too much away, but the exchange of a little creature. But that to me was actually the most violent moment in the entire movie.
Oh, I remember that from the Don Siegel film.
Yeah, because I was going to say
the turtle moment, right?
Yeah, exactly. But that's in both movies. That is finally the most violent.
That's a turning point.
Yeah, it is. It's a point where there's different kinds of reactions, or there's a real regret in your version.
Yeah, and I feel like the youngest girl, the 12-year-old Amy, is, you know, the innocent, and she still believes in him. And at that moment, it all really turns.
Yeah, but that's also too the moment when you kind of. That's the moment, the point of no return, really.
Yeah.
You can sort of feel the entire house kind of go, oh, okay.
Yeah.
We're done with this. By the way, it's a treatment. I'm talking to the director and adapter of The Beguiled, Sofia Coppola. Her new film is The Beguiled. When you went back to the book, were you surprised how much stuff wasn't in the movie?
The book was really, I mean, it's very like pulpy 60s. It was so dense because each chapter is another character and there's so many characters. So I kind of went through and decided which characters I was going to focus on. And then I tried to get more. At this point, I don't remember how much is my imagination and how much is from the book because that happens when you adapt it. But then I would go back to specific scenes and read more kind of the backstories or the dialogue and work from the book. And I tried to forget about the other movie and just start it as a whole new project.
Because I feel like it's... Again, the reason I was bringing up that thing about these characters all seeming so different is that the book is about all these characters. Each chapter is another point of view.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that each one is written from the voice of that girl or woman, and then so you're piecing it together with their impression of it all. And there was like a whole, I think there was like a whole like court scene where they're debating what to do with him, and it was all drawn out. So I mean, I tried to keep it. It just, you know, it's editing when you're adapting a book of what to keep and then how to string it together.
It's funny because it moves really fast. I was shocked at how quickly it had gone by just because it's, again, it feels like it's, you basically hide the motor.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, I want it to all kind of start up in this very slow pace of these long, hot southern days where nothing's happening and they haven't seen anyone. And then when he comes in, it just starts to move. And then before you know it, things have escalated and that's it. And also, we shot it really quickly. We shot it in 26 days, so we kind of used every bit of footage we had.
No kidding. Did you just want to do that something that fast after?
It was just because it was pretty low budget, and it was ambitious what we were trying to do. So we just had to jam through it, and so I'm glad we got all the pieces we did.
But talk to me, I just want to talk to you about the production design and the costumes. I mean, because these costumes are so formal and. People wearing clothes that sort of tell us who and what they are is something I think about in your work too, that the costumes are very much about almost costumes for the characters in these movies, aren't they?
Yeah, it's something I think about when I'm writing the script because I think so much of that is how you know about how someone's presenting themselves by what they're wearing or just something I'm aware of. So I definitely think about that, about how you're going to convey the character of what they're wearing says a lot about that. And Stacey Batat, the costume designer, she'd never done a period film before. We'd worked together on Bling Ring and Somewhere, and I thought, she would have a fresh take on that. She's not academic, and I wanted it to appeal to a modern sensibility. So we looked at, you know, a lot of portraits and of that time, and so they're all based, you know, on the history and accurate, but that they could not look strange to a modern eye. So, you know, you could relate. They looked, you know, pretty to a modern eye. So it didn't seem like you could relate to them and not like these weird alien creatures.
But there's a great scene where Kristen is unwrapping.
Oh, yeah, her nightgown. That was in the book. I remember that moment from the book where she's she had a nightgown from Paris.
Yeah.
And she's unwrapping it in the tissue paper. And I love that moment, the way Kirsten is so full of hope and romance. And but I remember that moment from the book.
That's the thing, that's what I like, that moment where you're aware of the sense of that paper. The paper is described in great detail.
Oh, yeah.
As she's taking it off of that nightgown. I just thought that you saw that there was something that could be used in the book, that you weren't using the book for the plot, but you also saw that the moments.
The details. No, I think all those little moments, I think the ones that strike you stand out, that convey something about that character. And there was a whole story about Elle Fanning's character, that her mother was always looking for a rich husband and taking her traveling to find a man. And so I just thought that kind of girl would be raised with the idea that you know, you have to find a rich man. So whenever any man was around, she was presenting herself as a viable option. You know, so I thought it was so funny because every scene she's always presenting herself. And there are women that I think are really thinking about, you know, presenting themselves to a man. You know, I see it in modern day. So I thought that was that knowing her backstory helped kind of inform that character.
And the production design, too, because we don't see a whole lot of the house. What we see is really kind of key.
Yeah, and really helped me create that world. And the idea that that they're really cut off and isolated was important to me. And she did a lot of work to make the house look like in neglect with a lot of fake greens. And the house is kind of growing in all over them. And then they're isolated and cut off from the world. And just kind of the brutality of what was going on outside with the cannon sounds. And then the overgrown nature kind of enveloping them. And then inside is this very lovely, you know, Southern ladies world of femininity and hand embroidery and also she shifted. The art department was really thoughtful about, as the story progresses, they take away, he first gets there's lots of lace pillows and curtains, and then as he becomes more and more of a prisoner, the shutters close in and we take things away, so it's more stark, and he has like a scratchy blanket. And so they were really thoughtful of how the story progresses and how to use the visuals to tell that.
Why did you end up shooting in Louisiana rather than Virginia, where it's set?
Just because there's a film community there, and there's a lot of great crews, and it's set up to film in New Orleans.
I guess I actually thought
it was fun to be in New Orleans.
I've never been, so I wouldn't know.
Oh, you have to go. It's a great town. It's a great city, and people there are so nice, and it's all around food and drinking, and it has such a unique atmosphere. I mean, I haven't been to a lot of places in the South, but it has such a unique atmosphere to me.
I actually thought it seemed like an imagined version of what that period would be like, because it looks both kind of inviting and frightening at the same time.
Yeah, to me the South is very exotic. And even shooting on that real plantation, it's so beautiful, but then there's such a dark history there, and you feel it being there. You definitely feel that. And I think it you know, affects you when you're shooting, too, to be in these real places that have seen so much.
Plantations, I have no idea what you're talking about. We're out of time. My guest is Sophia Coppola. Her new film as writer-director is terrific. It's The Beguile. I can't thank you enough for doing this.
Thank you. It's so fun to talk to you, Elvis.
So much fun to have you. I've known you 20 years almost.
That's crazy.
No, I know, right? You're a real person, and I'm still here. Our recording engineer here at NPR West is Peter Slessel. The show is mixed by Kat Yor. It's edited by Blake Veit, who's associate producer. There's nothing beguiling about me. It's The Treatment. Catch up on past episodes of The Treatment, go to kcrw.com or listen on your smartphone with KCRW's mobile apps, or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. The Treatment is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica.
KCRW sponsors include Make It Universal and Rotten Tomatoes, presenting Scene on Screen with Jacqueline Coley, a brand new podcast about the people at NBC Universal and the movies that define them. Available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.